Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Synergy Connection Show. Patricia Simone is back with me today, but today's show is going to be somewhat of a reversal in that she is actually going to interview me. However, before we begin, I do want to share that Patricia is a certified hypnotherapist, and no, she's not going to hypnotize me. She's also a Reiki practitioner and an intuitive counselor. So I wanted you, Patricia, to let the listeners know if they want to reach you to discuss individual sessions, maybe on hypnotherapy, or if maybe somebody's listening that would like to bring you to their company for stress management programs or something like that, how would they reach you?
Well, thank you, Lucy. People can reach me through my website, www.thejewelsofknowledge.com. or email at patricia@thejewelsofknowledge.com, or by cell phone, 631-942-0506. Thanks.
You're welcome. I will give you a plug at the very end of this little discussion, too. So I guess we're going to start this. I know we talked about you doing an interview of me, and I probably was a little bit reluctant to do that. So what made you decide that doing an interview of me would be something listeners might enjoy?
Well, Lucy, I think that your listeners may not know all the accomplishments that you have, and I thought that it would be great to bring another side of you to your listeners, give them a more well-rounded picture of all the things that you do, because not only are you a radio show host, but you have your MA in family therapy.
Right.
And you're a Reiki master and the owner of Transcendent Wave for Reiki Services.
Right.
And you are a former owner and president of Synergy Counseling Services.
That was in Green Bay.
In Green Bay, Wisconsin, uh-huh. Right. You're also the former president of Tempo International, which was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Was that an international women's business organization?
It was. You had to actually either be the owner of or president of a business in order to belong to it. And it is international in the sense that it's located in a number of different countries as well. Right. But I had a mentor in Milwaukee who encouraged me, I would say, to start this program in the Green Bay area. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, there were a lot of women in very, very influential positions mm-hmm. with companies that were in Green Bay. And I was surprised at how many. So we sent out a list when the time arrived to start the program. And I think we had over 100 invitations that were sent out. And the actual program began with about 50, and then it grew from there. So we would have speakers in that had topics they wanted to share with women in particular, but sometimes we had men as guests as well.
Yeah, and it's amazing when you do something like that how much information you learn about your own community.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You get to learn about all these wonderful women in business.
Right.
And get to, you know, broaden everyone's horizons.
Exactly.
By bringing
exactly.
that forward. And that's another thing that you like to do is broaden people's horizons, right? You had another radio show?
I did. it went for about 2.5 years through a station called WGEE. And I was also a regular speaker on the television station. And being an owner of Synergy Counseling Services, one of the things that would happen regularly is whenever there was a major event going on, either locally or maybe even worldwide, the newspaper or the television station or somebody would call And they would want, you know, how do you think people are going to respond to this mm-hmm. event? And so mm-hmm. it was always a little inside information, I guess, that mm-hmm. they were looking for. The only thing I didn't like about that, and I actually stopped doing interviews as a result, mm-hmm. I would do my own radio show, but I stopped the rest of it, is, as you well know, you can cut and splice.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, yeah. sometimes what you said wasn't what they printed because they left out qualifiers.
Yes.
And so people would read and they would go, oh, did you really say that? And it would be, well, not in the context that it's being taken.
Right.
So that's something we couldn't control. It would be on the floor of the cutting room someplace. And right. you would go, well, that's really not what I had meant.
Right. It's not authentic.
No, it wasn't.
Right. And you like to keep your...
Just the way the news is yeah. today.
Yes.
Exactly.
Exactly. Authenticity and being able to represent yourself appropriately.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the workshops that you presented in Upsize Your Soul.
Well, there was a gentleman here in town by the name of Trey Malicote. And Trey and I have been friends for years, and we decided to create Upsize Your Soul about 3 years ago. And, you know, he's actually running with it pretty much now. But initially, he and I would do programs on rewriting your narrative, because a lot mm-hmm. of people live the narrative or the story that they believe is who they are.
Right.
And it's not actually who they are at all. Mm-hmm. And then we brought in information on energy and on crystals and understanding who your soulmates are and understanding who your twin flames are. So mm-hmm. we tried to have a fairly broad base mm-hmm. of what we felt would be beneficial for people right. to understand about who they actually are in life and maybe who they want to become.
Right. So helping people shed the layers,
mm-hmm.
right, mm-hmm. that society or families have sort of molded out for them.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Which was not, again, their authentic lives.
Right. And so many people don't know honestly and truly who they truly are.
Right.
They know who they're supposed to be.
Right.
And sometimes that comes from family members that have told them that. They know maybe who their church wants them to be
mm-hmm.
or who their particular political affiliation wants them to be.
Right.
Who work wants them to be.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of influences that cover up who we truly are as
right.
human beings, and we forget that.
Right, right. And I think that you would agree with me when we say that a lot of people come to a certain point in their life where they realize they're not who they want to be.
Right, right. And they're unhappy.
They're unhappy, and then how do we go back and figure out
mm-hmm.
how to be who we are really?
Right.
So I think that sounds like that was a great program.
It was. We had a lot of fun with it. Mm-hmm. We thought about taking it national for a while. And we might still someday mm-hmm. do, you know, some speaking engagements that are more national. But at the moment, I needed to do the radio show. And, you know, I still work part-time. And I have Transcendent Way. And I have a book coming out. So my life is fairly crowded.
Yes. Would you like to talk about your book right now, The Adventures of Miss Twiggs and Company?
Well, I think we'll talk about parts of it mm-hmm. a little bit later, maybe. But the book actually came out as an ebook, and it's been on Amazon since 2013. And it's about three mice that represent love, truth, and wisdom, named Miss Twiggs, Mortimer, mm-hmm. and Penelope. And it's set in 1946, right after the war is over, and it's set in England. And before the book was actually published, there was an individual who was from the outskirts of London in County Derbyshire, is the way it's pronounced. And I had a cat named Derby because we found cat, mm-hmm. you know, we found him on Kentucky Derby Day. And so we named him Derby. So Derby is one of the characters in the book. And as the book was getting ready to go onto Amazon, I talked to this gentleman and I said something to the effect of, you know, would you like to read it? And he said, well, I have dyslexia, but he said, why don't you tell me about it? And this was a gentleman who actually is very psychic
mm-hmm.
and does past life regressions and things of that nature. So as I'm explaining it to him, he said, well, where is the town in Derbyshire? Because he was from that area.
Right.
Which I did not know. And so I told him, I said, I just made it up. And he goes, well, what are you calling it? And I said, well, it's Mount Pleasant. And he just laughed. He said, sweetie, he said, there is a Mount Pleasant in Derbyshire. And I was, really? And he goes, no. So as I explained the book to him, he finally looked at me and he said, you channeled this whole book. You've lived there and you know the area and you know where the mice are from. You have way too many of the details that you could not have just created.
Right.
And so the edition that's coming out is the second edition. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be available for everybody in bookstores in 2020, ideally February. Mm-hmm. And there is an explanation in the actual beginning of this book as to how the mice even decided to take adventures out into the world, because most mice in real life only live to maybe 5 or 6 or 7 months, mm-hmm. if they're lucky. If they're out in, you know, the world,
right,
where
right.
they can be eaten by other little animals. And so these mice are very magical, mm-hmm. because they continue to go back to their home in Weardale, England. And they always know when they're supposed to leave and go on a new adventure. And they always discover just the right person that they have something to share with. And so you'll have to read the book in order to actually understand
it. I'm really
excited
about that. It's, you know, I'm really looking forward to that coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what do you think when the person that you met earlier, the psychic,
mm-hmm.
mentioned that you were channeling? What about that?
Well, what I have learned about myself is that I have probably channeled my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to call it until he named it.
Right.
But I've always known and I've always heard information. And I just thought that was the way life was, that
right.
everybody could do what I could do. And right. I've realized that that is not the case.
Right. Well, you did grow up in a country setting,
mm-hmm.
right?
And I
did. It was
did.
Very peaceful, very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that gave you the open space to hear what you needed to hear? Like, talk to me about the childhood that you had. In the country. Mm. You worked with animals, right?
I did. My dad loved animals and my mom did too. So we were on 5 acres. There were no leash laws at mm-hmm. that particular time in the town that I grew up in. And I would ride my bicycle all over the place. I mm-hmm. actually went back in my late 30s, I think, early 40s. My mother was living in California and did not want to go to a cousin reunion, which was set in Indiana. And so I flew back to represent her. And I went back to the same little town that I grew up in. And the roads really hadn't changed too much. Okay. The house was still the same out in the country. I actually drove up the driveway.
Wow, and how was that?
It was fun. It was really fun. I asked the owner was there, and I explained that I had lived there mm-hmm. as a child. And he didn't ask me in or anything, but, you know, we talked about the grounds. So that particular house was on 5 acres,
mm-hmm.
and we had at one time 11 German Shepherds.
Wow.
And
did
they
you
were,
raise them?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Not for sale.
Mm-hmm.
We
wow.
just kind of took care of them, and, you know, they found homes through us,
oh.
So we didn't keep all 11,
mm-hmm.
but at one point there were 11, and we had 22 cats.
Wow.
And those were pretty much just wild cats that we fed. And
right.
so they had their babies, and
mm-hmm.
they slept in the garage. And my mom would ring a dinner bell that we had on the back porch, which was our, you know, like, notice to come home
right.
from wherever we were. But it was also the cat's notice that it was dinner time. So I think living in the country, it was, like you said, peaceful. There were a lot of things to do that were out. Side things. And I, you know, I look back, I never liked playing with dolls.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to do whatever the boys were doing.
Right.
And so if it was fishing or riding my bike or just, you know, playing in the trees or doing something that was outside.
Right.
And I think I communicated with animals very easily back then. And again, not knowing necessarily that that's what I was doing. I just think that they, you know, would let me know if they were hungry or they were sad or they were hurt.
Right. This was very natural to you then.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
So you, were you aware at that time of the natural rhythm of life, or is that something that you grew to understand?
Golly. I honestly think that I was aware of it.
Right.
I do. I have always had an affinity for trees.
Mm-hmm.
I used to lay under them as a child and, you know, look up into their branches. And there's a children's book that probably is very representative of how I see trees.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a number of them, but one was called Freddy the Leaf.
Oh.
And it was about a leaf that didn't want to drop off and die, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the growing cycle. And it was a beautiful transition for him at the end,
right.
but he was very fearful, as many people are,
right.
about maybe getting older and eventually dying. The other book that I loved was called The Giving Tree. I don't know whether you ever read it or not, but
yes.
I read that to my son as he was growing up. And, you know, that is that a tree gives you everything. It
mm-hmm.
not only gives you the oxygen you need to breathe,
right.
but we cut them down for houses and we cut them down to create, you know, ships back in
mm-hmm.
the days when they were made more out of wood than they were, you know, steel.
Right.
So, you know, a tree to me is representative of us as individuals,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we are born into the world in a different way than a tree is,
mm-hmm.
but we nevertheless, you know, our lives are about giving
right.
and sharing, and that's what trees do.
And don't you think it's interesting that the books that you're just talking about are very philosophical?
Yes.
And
yes.
is that sort of how you got into choosing psychology as a major when you went to school, when you went to college?
I think so. I think I have always been very aware of interactions between people and seeing that so many times we don't have the skills to heal ourselves.
Right.
And so my objective might have been more of learning how to help people live a more fulfilling life
right.
Rather than staying within their own self-defined walls
right.
and then, you know, being very anxious about the outside world or being very fearful. And I always tell people, you know, fear is nothing more than false evidence appearing real.
Right, right.
And if we believe it, you know,
mm-hmm.
it becomes. So monitoring our beliefs, monitoring our thoughts, you
right.
know, became something that was important to me
right.
To learn about how that works.
Right. And in learning to be a nurturer.
Mm-hmm.
A natural nurturer, healer.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that would be the next natural rhythm of your life,
mm-hmm.
stepping right into that career in psychology. So if that were the case then, why did you initially start as a nurse?
Well, I guess you have to go back to the kind of time frame that I lived in at that
mm-hmm.
moment. I was dating somebody that I had known. We had lived in Arkansas for a while, and I was a junior in high school when we were living there, and the young man that I was dating had gone off to medical school,
mm-hmm.
and so I finished, you know, high school, and I chose my college to be within about 200 miles of where he was in
mm-hmm.
pre-med, and I, in my very naive thinking at that moment in time, I thought, well, this would be perfect. He'll become a doctor, and he did. He became
mm-hmm.
a very well-known oncologist, actually. But he became a doctor, and I was going to become a nurse because I thought that's the perfect fit,
mm-hmm.
is, you know,
very
husband and wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, very complimentary. We can work together. Well, as he went on and I went on, we grew further and further apart because, you know, it wasn't a good fit emotionally. For us. And so I started in nursing. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I was on a 5-year program that would have had a BS in nursing and an RN degree. But I couldn't give somebody a shot, literally.
Mm.
When I was at the hospital program, we would be like the candy stripers of old
right.
days.
Mm-hmm.
And they called me Mary Sunshine. Because I was always talking to them about things other than what they were getting ready to have done.
Oh.
So if it was surgery or a procedure or something, I knew I could feel their anxiety.
And you were working with their minds at that point.
Yeah,
right?
And I was already going down that road. And
right.
so the staff, you know, had said, why don't you become an instructor and just go through nursing, not going to be a nurse? And I thought, why would I want to do that when what I want to do is work with somebody to help them again live a more fulfilled life
right.
and being an instructor of nursing is not going to help me do that
right.
So I left at mid-semester, mm-hmm. and I think the only credits that I got that year were 3 hours of organic chemistry.
Oh, and the tough class. That's a very difficult class.
Right, but that was all that I got out of the nursing program. And then I decided I wanted to graduate with my class. Mm-hmm. So never being afraid of any kind of obstacles, I guess, I just said, okay, what do I need to do to make that happen? Right. And it was to go to summer school and take somewhere between 19 and 21 units per semester.
Wow.
And so I went through college basically in 3 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then eventually graduate school in 1 year instead of two.
Wow.
So, I mean, but you can. And that's, you know, one of my favorite books, too, for children is The Little Engine That Could.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what she did, is she kept saying, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, until she went over the top of the mountain.
Right.
And then it was, I knew I could, I knew I could.
Right, right.
So I think if we can learn to live our lives that way, mm-hmm. with believing that all things are possible.
Right.
But you have to have the belief.
You have to have that belief, right. Mm-hmm. And so where did your belief come from? How did you tap into that?
You know, I wish I knew. I honestly and truly wish I knew. My mom was the proverbial optimist.
Okay.
And so I believe I did get, you know, that universal kind of, yes, you can.
Right, good.
I would say my dad, as a CPA, was a person that was very much, you know, if it added up 2 + 2 = 4, mm-hmm. that was good. If it was anything other than that, it wasn't.
Right.
So he was very much black and white in the way he saw the world, which was totally the opposite of the way I saw the world.
Right. Right.
So I don't know. I think we were born into families that we're supposed to be in to mm-hmm. learn lessons that we're supposed to learn.
Right.
And so I probably took the organizational skills from my dad.
Right, right.
And I took the Pollyanna viewpoint of life from my mom, and I somehow found something that was going to fit, you know, in between. I'm neither one, but I'm a little bit of both.
Right, which makes up such a great combination,
I suppose.
And I think this is some of the parts of you that your listeners would really benefit from knowing.
Mm.
Knowing there's more to you than just what you put on the air. Right, it's behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, and that's usually that's usually where I like to be, is behind the scenes.
I know. So you may be feeling a little discomfort today, but it's
okay. A little bit. Yeah. It's like, how much do I really want to share?
That's right. Well, it's all, you know. We'll keep it very light then. Mm. But what I'd like to know is some of the experiences that you had in college, let's say, that sort of showed up in your forming your career.
Okay.
Particularly something that we were speaking about earlier today,
right? Right. And I had forgotten that actually it was one of the questions, because as the listener probably should realize, is that you had asked me to give you a few questions.
Yes, I did.
And I did. So that I didn't know exactly where we were going to go with the interview as a whole. But this did happen my senior year, and it was such fun. And again, if a listener is out there realizing that their current life has been shaped so much by experiences. And if they look at all these experiences, some of them are just pure magic.
Yes.
And this was one. I was a senior, and I was president of the psychology club at the college. And I was listening to the radio, which is, I don't know why, looking back, I had been listening to this particular program, but it involved a certified witch from England named Dame Sybil Leake.
Mm-hmm.
And Dame Sybil Leake was just a unique personality, and she happened to be interviewed in St. Louis on this radio station on a given day. And I did not know how long she would be there. But I called the radio station. Her manager was still there with her. I asked if they would be open mm-hmm. to actually coming out to the college and speaking, and they agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it was just whirlwind. The day that she was actually going to speak, I looked out at the campus, and we had a long driveway that came in
mm-hmm.
From the front, and all I could see was headlights. And many years later, I thought of the movie Field of Dreams,
right,
where if you believe it, they will come.
Right.
And that's what I was seeing. I didn't have that frame of reference at that time because that movie wasn't out yet.
Right.
But it terrified me because I realized all these people were actually beginning to arrive for this particular person. Mm-hmm. And our little auditorium at the college could seat about 500 maybe. Mm-hmm. And I realized if they're arriving this early, we may have a seating dilemma. So long story short is we did, and the Presbyterian Church, which was part of our campus, agreed to open their doors. Mm-hmm. And we had standing room only at that particular evening, you know, at the campus church. And she was amazing. But mm-hmm. she came out, she wrote a book, and for some of you listening, you might want to see if you can find the book. It's called The Witch and the Jackdaw, J-A-C-K-D-A-W. And she literally walked out onto, like, the pulpit. And we had people on the balcony. We had people in the back of the church. We had the aisles, you know, some people along the sides of the aisles. And I think they thought that she was going to perform witchcraft. I honestly do. But, you know, that is not what she did. And she spoke for about an hour and a half. And I just remember that she had on a chartreuse dress. And her hair was this orangey red. So she truly looked, you know, the part.
The part, right. Right.
And being from England, she had that wonderful British accent.
Right.
But she was absolutely incredible. And I look back on that and I think, how did you make that happen? How did that even fall into being? And again, it's one of those times when if you're open, the universe literally delivers to you these magical moments.
Right. And what I find especially interesting is the fact that you trusted the information coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because so many people would think, wouldn't it be great if we had this woman come and speak
right.
to us? But then would create all of the scenarios why that wouldn't be possible.
Right.
And talk themselves out of actually doing something. And I find that when we do that, we're getting in our own way. And think of all the magic you can create when you do
mm-hmm.
trust your intuition and just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Forgetting about all those other limiting beliefs.
Limiting beliefs. And that is the sad part, is that so many times we live a life of limiting beliefs.
Right, because we hear so many other people telling us, you can't do this,
mm-hmm.
it's not possible,
mm-hmm.
and those are their beliefs.
Exactly, and right. if you want to adopt them, they become yours.
That's right. Sometimes that happens when we're not aware,
mm-hmm.
but as our level of awareness goes up, we begin to trust the messages that we get.
Right.
And not only enrich our lives, but those around us.
Absolutely.
So, such as you did that day yourself.
Yes. Well, it enriched my life, but I think it also touched hundreds of people that were there that night.
And so would you say that's one of the first times you began to recognize the synchronicities of life?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I had seen it a little bit previously in snippets,
mm-hmm.
But nothing quite, you know, that way. There was another time, my freshman year, and mm-hmm. I'll share this because some of you will probably chuckle. But, you know, I had my first taste of freedom, just, yes. you know, being away from home and having had a wonderful freshman year on campus. So I didn't want to go home.
Right.
I didn't want to go back to being a child.
That's completely understandable. Yeah.
And so on our bulletin mm-hmm. board, they had job postings for the summer months. Mm-hmm. And one of the job openings was at the YMCA of the Rockies in Estes Park, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I saw that and I went, that's where I want to go.
Right.
And so I forged my mother's signature and sent off the application. You had to tell in so many words, you know, why you wanted to be on their campus that summer. And so I did all of that. I was chosen. And so I let my parents know after the fact, oh, by the way, I'm going to work in the Rockies this summer. And many years later, my son actually went to Colorado to live, and we went back to the YMCA of the Rockies. And, of course, it has changed. I mean, the Rockies haven't changed, but the buildings and everything mm-hmm. have changed.
Right.
And so they told me that I probably needed to go to the museum to see the yearbooks, because they took pictures of all of us. as we would work there.
Right.
And so they had created this museum that actually went back to the beginning mm-hmm. of the YMCA of the Rockies.
Oh,
and of course, I wasn't
nice.
There then, but
right.
so my son walks over to where they have all of these yearbooks mm-hmm. and he pulls the one from the year that I was there, flips it open, and there I am.
Wow.
And so I think that might have been the very beginning of understanding synchronicity, that
right.
once you are open to saying, I want this,
mm-hmm.
if it is a pure thought, if it is one that isn't covered up with a lot of fear and anxiety
mm-hmm.
or anger or something else, then the universe just kind of goes, oh, you want an experience.
Right.
You want to go do this. There you go. Look at that bulletin board.
That's right.
Boom. There's the job offer.
Right.
And so we can have those experiences every single day if we're
right.
open to it.
Exactly. And all the wonderful things that can happen when the universe presents us with the gift.
Yes.
And then we receive it and we do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm listening to you talk about some of the stories you've read as a child
mm-hmm.
and, of course, Ms. Twiggs. And
mm-hmm.
I think to myself, as a psychotherapist, did you focus on children at first? Or what were the types of clients that you were working with?
Actually, in the very beginning, when I got out of graduate school, I was in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for a place called the Missouri Baptist Children's Home.
Oh.
And that was quite literally a place where parents, I don't think they had very many foster families back at that
mm-hmm.
time.
Right.
And a lot of families who could not, for one reason or another, take care of their children would literally drop them off there.
Mm-hmm.
And the home would raise them for however long was necessary.
Right.
So in some cases, I think they spent pretty much their lives there. And in other cases, where parents were maybe recovering from drugs or alcohol
mm-hmm.
or financial issues or something like that, they were there for a shorter period of time. So I started there, and I worked with families.
Right.
So I did work a lot with children and loss and
right.
coping skills, but I also worked with families. And,
right.
You know, some of the stories were just heartbreaking, you know, that
yeah.
I was seeing. And then from there, I started a company with another partner
mm-hmm.
that was called Professional Therapeutical Counselors in the
mm-hmm.
St. Louis area. And we received a grant from a major corporation to reduce recidivism.
Mm-hmm.
So it was taking prisoners that had not committed hardcore crimes.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't killed anybody, but they might have robbed. They might have used a weapon.
Right.
And they were at a halfway home, you know, so they weren't back in the community yet, and we were able to go in and once a week work with them, teaching them how to rethink
mm-hmm.
so that they wouldn't commit crimes in the future, hopefully.
Right.
So I would say that my clients over the years, including professional athletes and businessmen and judges and ministers, and you
mm-hmm.
know, they were all walks of
right.
life.
Right. So you attracted many walks of life, but what was it that that you were attracted to? What did you feel driven towards? So in other words, you've got the stories, Miss Twiggs, and
mm-hmm.
you're talking about the magic
mm-hmm.
and sort of forming the belief systems. Did you
mm-hmm.
find yourself being drawn to any particular? Because what we hear today is, who's your avatar? Have
right.
you heard that?
Right, right.
And so I would wonder, looking back on your career, who do you feel you had an avatar? Or is that another limiting belief system that we're creating today?
Wow, that's a good question. What I'm going to say is going to sound a little probably unusual.
Mm-hmm. No judgments.
I don't believe that I have a human avatar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I believe my avatar is a spiritual one.
Okay.
And I think it is a female. And I think she has been with me since I was very young, showing me how energy works and how spirit works through us.
Okay.
So about the time that I did this, it was called the Thinker's Edge program that this corporation funded.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some events that happened right around that with my business partner that was very heartbreaking for me, because I thought we were exceptionally good friends as well as business partners. And that program broke up. She actually took the program that we had and made it part of her dissertation.
Oh, wow.
And you know, our relationship ended. And it was mended about 20 years later. She actually found me and called and apologized because I think it had been weighing very heavily on her heart.
Right.
But I also realized that we are, at any moment in our life, called upon to make course changes. And when that happens, sometimes the transition is a little rocky, and that's what was happening. I would have continued doing exactly what I was doing with her, probably indefinitely. And that's not what Spirit wanted. Spirit wanted me to go into loss and grief. And it kind of pushed me very hard to go into that because I had not experienced any of that. And this little story, I belonged to, I was a very avid golfer, and I was very good at what I did as far as golf is concerned. I had a low handicap and won a number of tournaments. And so I knew this gentleman through my golfing that owned a very large and very successful funeral home and cemetery in the St. Louis area. And I have, like I said, a spirit, an avatar that maybe guides me. And
oh, you're a spirit guide.
Yep. And so she was very adamant that I call him. But I didn't know why I was supposed to call him. I just was supposed to call him. So I get on the phone, I call him, and we set up a lunch date. And I have no idea what I'm supposed to even say to him other than I'm supposed to go. And it isn't until I am seated across from him at lunch about 10 days later that out of my mouth comes the words. And the words were, have you ever thought about having a bereavement program through your funeral home? And he said, strangely enough, I just came from the Funeral Directors of America where we are talking about that very thing.
Wow. Yeah.
So again, you know, the window and doors were open. And
more
I walked
synchronicity.
Through. Yeah, more synchronicity, and I walked through.
Right.
And that led me to doing programs throughout the United States to instruct funeral directors that grief does not end when the funeral is over. And they needed to have programs and things that they could work with, which I set up then for people around the United States. So that led me actually to meeting my husband because he was checking in to the St. Louis airport and flying back to Chicago as I was going to Chicago to speak.
And that's another synchronicity.
It's another synchronicity.
That's right. You met your husband on that plane. And how long were you together?
Well, we were together 32 years. But we were, you know, it was very interesting. We had a two-year, just about, you know, courtship. And he would fly to St. Louis and I would fly to Chicago. But that led us to living in Green Bay. And then that brought us to Florida. And, of course, he died almost 2 years ago. And I think some of the listeners know that. But that led me down another path into understanding holistic health and the importance of not just handing over our health to a medical person. We know our bodies better than anybody, but we have to learn to listen to our bodies.
And we do have to find people who trust our own, our voice. So we need to give our information to the doctors and then have to be confident that the doctors are going to take our information and work with that as well. It's not
and
always, it's not always just about the numbers.
No, it isn't. And unfortunately, most people in the medical field today, unless they're holistic physicians or homeopathic, you know, by nature, they look at numbers. They look at things like blood pressure, and they don't think of the nutritional ways that you might be able to correct that. They give you a prescription drug which has side effects that are not necessarily in your best interest. Or they'll look at cholesterol, and they immediately go to a statin drug because that's what they're being educated with, is your drug reps only are there to sell prescription drugs. And so many statins are now causing tremendous side effects for people, including what appears on the surface to be dementia or an Alzheimer's kind of reaction to a drug. But your heart is your biggest muscle, and one of the side effects of all statin drugs, just about, is they affect your muscles. So you're not able to walk very well. You're not able to climb stairs anymore. You're not able, you don't have endurance. And your heart's a muscle. Come on, people. You know, it's time to really listen to these things and appreciate that if you do your homework, if you start eating, you know, a healthier diet, if you start exercising, if you do something like yoga or meditation, you know, there's so many ways that we can make our physical bodies better. So again, another synchronistic connection was my husband's diagnosis of breast cancer 14 years ago now led to me doing a tremendous amount of research as to why and how and when and where and what, and looking at those components of disease so that I would better be able to guide people in the future that it's not over unless you say it's over.
Right, and many people are resistant to the fact that men can develop breast cancer.
It's 1%.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right, it's 1%, but it still does happen. So when your husband's diagnosis came in with breast cancer, and you were already living in Florida, is that when you started to understand on a deeper level the mind-body connection?
Yes, yes.
And the other holistic practices? So it's almost as if, do we really need to wait for a crisis now to come into our lives to introduce us to other modalities of healing?
Well, I mean, to me, that is the very reason for the Synergy Connection show.
Right.
Is I'm trying to, I guess, educate people to the best of my ability that we don't have to wait for somebody to die. We don't have to wait for a disease to be diagnosed.
Right.
We control, to a very large degree, how we respond to life.
Right.
You know, we can either throw up our hands and go, oh my God, or we can dig in and learn about things and maybe shift the tide a little bit in our direction. But if we give away all of our control to someone else, you know, be it again a spouse or be it a physician or be it our minister or be it our boss. I mean, but if we give away who we are as human beings, then we can't complain about what happens to us.
Right.
And so I figured that the Synergy Connection show was a way, a vehicle for me to begin to say, please connect the dots.
Right.
Please look at the emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental well-being of who you are.
Package,
the whole package, because you are so much more than just one little bitty component.
Right. And so a lot of people, I think, and today we are looking at holistic medicine as a more acceptable form of sometimes prevention, as well as there are treatments that we can use as well. But does that necessarily mean, which some people I think are incorrectly assuming, that it's one or the other? Can it be both? Is there room for a space for both?
I think there's room for both, but I'm saying that with a certain amount of caution, because I am well aware, and I think you are too, that there are physicians out there that with very, very busy practices that are actually firing their patients because their patients are not willing to do everything that they tell them to do.
Right.
And so if your physician says you have to take this medication, otherwise I'm not working with you, you need to find a new physician. There are ones out there that are open to holistic methods, and they'll talk to you about your diet. They'll talk to you about exercise. They'll talk to you about ways to calm your mind. They're willing to work because they understand, you know, much like the old-fashioned doctors that used to come to your homes, they understand that there's stress in your life, and they understand there's relationship issues and there's financial issues, and all of this is impacting who you are.
Right, because we understand that when the mind is under stress, how does that reflect in the body?
Yep.
Especially when the body's already compromised.
Right, exactly.
Right? That cannot aid in healing.
Right.
In healing the body.
Right, and I, you know, there have been a couple of programs where I've actually explained to, you know, like maybe not as deep a level as what I understand, because I'm afraid I'm going to bore somebody to tears.
I don't think so.
We have, you know, six chakras that are in our body, that are our energy centers. And in each one of those chakras, there are endocrine glands. And the endocrine glands are what keep our body healthy in part. Mm-hmm. So if you have a chakra, for instance, the third chakra being the solar plexus, that has to do with the person, if in your personal life there's all kinds of unrest, then the endocrine glands that are there are going to be impacted, and they will be reflected as to how healthy or unhealthy you are. So we are a system. We're such a dynamic system. And what we do with our thoughts, what we do with what goes in our body, what we do with every aspect of our being, how much we sleep or don't sleep, you know, all of that impacts who we are as viable human beings on this planet and what we want to do with our life.
Now, was it before you came to Florida or after your husband became ill that you decided to get into Reiki?
Actually, that was before. I was probably in 2000, right about then. I had a dear friend who actually had a Reiki master staying at her home, and they were going to do a three-day program, and she thought that I would be very good at this. And so she invited me, and I went very skeptically because I was still pretty much in my head with, you know, this has to make scientific sense. This has to, you know,
you
be...
You had your dad's, you know, black and white training going on, right?
I did. And I was a business person. So, you know, I mean, I own Synergy Counseling at that point, and I just thought, well, I'll do it because she's a friend. So the first evening was more a background in this particular technology, or the Reiki method, I will say, is called the Usui method, and it's out of Japan, and it's been around for 1,000 years or more. So it was very interesting, but I was still questioning it a little bit. So I came back the next day, and it was a full-day program, and we were working on one another. We learned the visual symbols and everything, but we were working on one another. And the person that I initially worked on, this Usui Reiki master, was standing by me. And I realized that I wasn't seeing the symbols. I was seeing what had happened to her. And so I found myself saying, "You were in a car accident." And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Your head hit the window very hard." And she said, "Yes." And I said, "I'm beginning to feel that it was extremely cold." And she said, "Yes." And the Usui master that's next to me is going, "Hmm, you have a gift." And I was like, "I don't know what I'm doing." But I was feeling it all and seeing it. And so the weekend, you know, from there, it was very enlightening. So that was level one. And with a Reiki master, you have three levels. So you do level two, ideally about a year later. My brother, in the meantime, was diagnosed with lung cancer that had traveled to his brain. He had three brain tumors. And so I was in the process of level two training when he was diagnosed. And the day before he died, his right foot had become gangrenous. It had turned black. And he had what's called lymphedema. And so the prognosis, I mean, I basically told the hospice people that were there, do whatever you need to do to make this painless. So I was giving her permission to overdose him because he was not going to survive. But I was able to take both of my hands and put them on either side of that foot because the pain was, they couldn't control it with morphine. And by putting my hands on each side of his foot, I could give him temporary relief. And so he would get 30 minutes, you know, of sleep. And the minute I took my hands away, he would wake up. So I began again to put that, you know, realizing the power of it.
More confirmation for you. A deeper understanding too, when you can see those results in someone who's suffering. That you know, healing power is there.
Right.
And what about when Jack was in the ICU? Did he let you use Reiki on him?
When he was in ICU, he was terrified. Mm-hmm. The doctors at that point said he had an hour and a half to live because he had pericardial effusion. Mm-hmm. So that was 500 cc's of fluid crushing his heart, and he had 78% oxygen. They cannot remove fluid or do any surgeries whatsoever unless you're at 98%. Mm-hmm. And it's not a matter of putting an oxygen mask on somebody. Right. And getting them there,
right?
Which I didn't realize. I thought, well, just give him oxygen.
Right, right.
Well, no, that isn't the way. Your body has to be infused on a cellular level with 98% oxygen. So they just said he has an hour and a half to live, and they left me with him. Again, this is another time when I believe my spiritual guide whispered quite literally in my ear, put your right hand on the top of his head and put your left hand on his heart.
Right.
And it took 30 seconds. So I promise you it was not me.
Oh, yes,
it
I understand.
30 seconds, and he had 98% oxygen in his body.
Wow.
The doctors had no idea what I was doing, but they took him off to surgery, and he did live another 3.5 years.
Wow.
So it was a time that he needed for his own personal healing, I think, and it was a time that I needed for, you know, what I was working through.
Right.
And so at that moment, I totally understood that this is when you are connected on that, not only energetic level, but on a chakra level. We have actually 12, and the 12th chakra is divinity.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been told that I have a pink aura around me. And so the pink is the 11th. And that is the healing chakra. So I knew that my guide was literally working through me. And I believe she is on the 12th. And so she was sending her healing message all the way, you know, down through my hands. And that's why it only took 30 seconds. Because they can achieve things that we can't.
They're the miracles. Yeah. That's where the miracles are.
Right.
And so what was Jack's take on that? Did you tell him about that experience?
He was pretty unconscious, and all he knew was the doctors were wheeling him into surgery. I mean, he kind of settled, I think, with that energetic input, but he, I would also say, was pretty out of it, you know, because he was so close to death.
Oh, right,
and,
right.
And so I don't think he totally appreciated anything other
than
something is going to be done.
Right.
And so that sense of, okay, maybe I'm not going to die.
Right.
Was there. And so and it took months.
Yeah,
it
his
took
recovery.
Months for him to, you know. And I don't know that he ever totally understood it, because I'm not sure I totally understood it until after he died.
Right.
I began to understand it more and more as time went on.
Right. And so how did your writing for the book come from all the work that you've done? Is there healing energy in the book?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So did you, you know, you felt as though with this second edition coming out, did you feel as though that energy was coming forward? Were you more consciously aware?
Yes, yes, very much so. And the book has had so many totally amazing, we'll have to do that as another show, but a totally amazing, I wouldn't even know where to go with it, just synchronous events that have happened with people that we've met, I've met, the mice have met, you know, to bring them to life. I think there's the potentiality, at least, of having a program someday called Miss Twig's Adventureland, which I'll have to, you know, talk about it some other time. But yeah, it's just the book itself, because it deals with recovery after World War II. The little boy that's in it, Brian, is 11 years old. His father is a pastor at the local parish church there in the community. And everybody is coming to grips with, you know, lives that were lost, property that was damaged, trying to get themselves back together again. It's not unlike any other time in our history. So I wanted to make that really clear, is that we all go through challenging times. And it doesn't make a difference if it's biblical times or if it's today in, you know, 2019.
Right.
And it's what we do mm-hmm. with those times when they're challenging. How do we cope? Right. What are our thoughts? How do we handle ourselves? Right. And that's what the mice do, is that they help Brian, who's trying to figure out why bad things happen mm-hmm. to his village, you know, the people that he's known for all of his life.
Right.
Why did they have to suffer? Why did they have to lose loved ones?
Right.
And so the answers come through their messages to him.
Right. It's interesting, you know, and I'm wondering, as I'm sitting here listening to you talk, like, how has your life changed since you started you practicing Reiki? So what does it feel like to know that we are not alone, and we do have our spirit guides with us?
Mm-hmm.
How does that, you know, when you look at life as a child, and maybe these things are true and maybe they're not true,
mm-hmm.
and we have blind faith, but now knowing through your experience with Reiki, seeing the results of it, being able to channel, like, what kind of comfort does that offer you? Is there a shift, or was there ever a doubt for you?
I don't think there was ever a doubt for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, you know, an aha moment per
right.
se.
Mm-hmm.
It was a continuous, are you paying attention
mm-hmm.
kind of moment. And there were moments in my life when I wasn't paying attention. You know,
right.
I was so wrapped up in owning a company, you know,
mm-hmm.
making sure that it was viable and successful. There were moments when I was raising, you know, a son.
Right.
And my focus was on helping him be the best person that he could become.
Right.
You know, giving him hopefully some tools that would make a difference in his life. But I think as I'm nearing, you know, a stage in my life where it's all coming together,
right.
so to speak, it's reassuring as much as it is anything to be
right.
able to see that continuity that goes
right.
from beginning to the end of your life. And it doesn't have to ever end. You know,
right.
our lives don't end. We may give up our physical being,
mm-hmm.
but that's not the end.
Right. So what kind of advice would you give a parent right now? You know, someone raising their children with the spirituality taking the forefront now. Well, most people are aware of the changes and the shifts and
mm-hmm.
conscious awareness. And
mm-hmm.
what kind of advice would you give somebody, let's say, raising a child right now?
Lines of communication
mm-hmm.
are probably the most critical if you're working with children. And one of the things that I've always said to parents is that you never ask the question why.
Mm-hmm.
Because why brings you nothing but defensive posturing,
mm-hmm.
whether it's from an adult or a child. So you don't ask why, but you do ask things like what,
mm-hmm.
what made you think that,
right.
where did you get that information, how did you arrive at that conclusion. But learning to ask interview, basically, questions,
mm-hmm.
and then being still,
right.
which is one of the biggest problems for most parents, is they go into lecture mode. And when you're in lecture mode, you can't, you know, do what you need to do.
Right.
So I think we'll stop it there, but I want you to give, again, your information as to how people can reach you,
sure.
and then I will close.
Sure. Well, I have to say this was fun sitting in the interview seat. So thank you for coming along on this journey with us today. And my name is Patricia Simone. I'm the owner of the Jewels of Knowledge. And I can be reached through my website at thejewelsofknowledge.com, via email at patricia@thejewelsofknowledge.com, or by cell 631-942-0506. And
okay.
thank you for playing along with me today.
Oh, it was interesting being on the other end of this.
Yes,
and so
yes.
I hope we didn't bore the audience too much with my background.
I want to
remind everybody that if this is a program that you feel would be of benefit to somebody to listen to, you can revisit the show on SynergyConnectionRadio.com. And all of the shows are archived there, so you can go through. There's 5 pages of shows now, soon to be 6, and you can pick any or all of the shows that are of interest to you. If you order anything from Boomers, and you know, I alluded to the fact that we have to take responsibility for our own personal health. If you use my name, Lucy, L-U-C-Y, in the promo code, you can get $5 off of your order each and every time that you order from the company. They are doing that for the listeners. So we're going to have you back, Patricia, in the very near future. I think it's closer to Christmas, but yes. We're going to be talking about new beginnings
right.
for 2020. Mm-hmm. So please tune in and listen to that show. But thanks for being a valued listener to the Synergy Connection Show, and go out there and make it your very best life. Thanks, everybody.